Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Oh, man. The Wolf Leader by Alexandre Dumas. Am I saying it right?
Alexandre. Let's just say Alexander.
Alexander Dumas.
Just English it.
And am I Dumas-ing correctly?
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
And we know him from The Three Musketeers and The Count of Monte Cristo.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Those are his two big ones.
Yep.
And this, I have no idea if this is typical Dumas or not. What would you say on this one? Is this a departure for him, or?
I mean, the supernatural element is a departure, but I mean, if you think, have you read The Three Musketeers?
No, not apart from like the golden books that Dumas? I read as a kid.
Okay. Yeah.
You remember those?
They were illustrated golden classics, and
they were about 100 pages.
Well, or any movies you might have seen of any of these things. Plenty. I mean, he did big, fun adventures, kind of swashbuckling usually. But he did, you know, also not in The Three Musketeers. In a lot of them, there was no moral element at all. Except this is a jolly good story. But anybody who's read The Count of Monte Cristo, which I have, or seen the movies, which I've seen at least one, knows that there's a deeply moral question at the center of that.
Yes.
Which is, you know, what happens when you've been done really wrong, and what will you do about revenge, and what does it do to you?
Yeah.
So there's that moralistic element. And this book, this is kind of like an interesting take on the Faustian tale of you make a deal with the devil. And with a little werewolfery thrown in at the very end. Just a little
werewolfery, yep. I love it.
And not the way that they like to talk about it these days.
Right.
And but it's still a highly moralistic tale, I think you would say.
I would say
Don't you think?
Yeah, I do. And it's interesting you say that about the Count of Monte Cristo, because Thibault, am I saying his name right? Is that okay? How are we going to say Thibault? Is that right?
I know. I always say Thibault, but you know, we shouldn't say the T, really.
Let's just agree on
the
whatever.
End. Yeah, we'll just say whatever.
Okay.
Thibault.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
Thibault.
Yeah, so he is, at the beginning, treated very badly and is also kind of revenge, right? So there's this germ of the same thing as Count of Monte Cristo, at least there at the very beginning.
Oh, you know, that's really interesting, because this isn't really spoilers. It's in the initial description, and there are plenty of descriptions in this book. But when they talk about his father gave him an education, had him educated, he went to school, and they said, unfortunately, he didn't really learn what he should have out of it. What he kind of learned was how to envy other people for their stuff and wish that his life was a lot easier.
Yeah.
And he wasn't taking away what he should have. And so some people will look at this and say, it's also a class commentary.
Mm.
I don't really know that it's that. I think Thibault, the whole point is he's kind of stupid, but he's run by his passions.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks he's smarter than he is because of this education or because of whatever he thinks he knows. And what's shown to him time after time after time after time is that's not really necessarily the case.
Yeah, very interesting.
And so it is a similar idea of the revenge and all this, but not played out the same way at all.
Well, good. Okay. So, you want to summarize? Yeah, I do agree. You want to summarize and then we can go deeper.
So, this is kind of interesting because it's got a framework from Dumas' own memoirs, basically. Mm-hmm. So he starts off going, so when I was a kid, and this is actually the author really talking, and I was reading somewhere that they said most of that section at the beginning where it's talking about, we lived like this, we had these servants, and they told these stories. My dad would never let me hear him, but finally one day this servant took me off and told me this real scary story.
Hmm.
And this is it. So up to about that part of it, that's all lifted from his volume one of his memoirs, which had been published a few years ago. Yeah. He's changed a few things in the in that there's someone in this book, Madame Delande, maybe? I can't remember her name. Supposedly had an affair with Thibault, who's actually the name of somebody in the first part of the book. That didn't really happen, but she's in this book. But other than that, when he takes it and goes, and here's the story, then that whole part about the man who'd been had to be sent off by the father because he was having dreams that a witch was attacking him at night, that's made up.
Okay.
And then he launches into his own story, which is kind of interesting because then I started thinking, oh, it's about a shoemaker who lives alone in the woods. Oh, it's about, you know, it's about kind of some of these fairy tale elements that he uses to kind of start the story with.
Yeah.
A talking wolf. And it's about, you know, these things. And I went, oh, it's a pure young girl with her old grandmother who she loves so much and just wants to take care of. So it's like, you know, you've got Little Red Riding Hood. You have all these different elements that he's kind of put at the beginning and then takes and does his own thing with.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
And I think so, you know, even the werewolfery is folklore too, isn't it?
And I don't know about that.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at, I have no idea if I'm looking at an authoritative source or not, but the you know, pact with the devil and witchcraft tied up with changing into a wolf and what the wolf represented is in the folklore of the of Europe in so anyway,
I didn't know that.
Well, I don't know much about that, but that's what I read.
I don't know much about Dumas. This is all I know about this book. So we're we're having a great time just skimming the surface and having fun.
Absolutely.
Everybody.
Everybody.
So so and so the story begins with Thibault, who is a shoemaker who lives in the woods or on the edge of the woods. And he is too well educated, as we have mentioned, and really kind of just wants his life to be better, but doesn't have a way to make it happen. And he gets involved in this deer hunt that's going on. Or actually, it's a wolf. No, it's a deer hunt that's going on. There are many hunts happening in this book at different points, and I can't always keep track of what they're hunting. There's always a deer. There's always some wolves somewhere.
Yeah, it was a magnificent deer, no less, that they were after at the beginning. Yeah.
An amazing stag that was getting away and doing all the things. And at one point, Thibault says, God won't give me what I want, so I'll ask the devil to give me that deer. And he doesn't literally make this deal like, come on, devil, do it. He just throws this curse out there into the air. And then when he's going in to check on it, why his goat keeps bleeding nervously, he finds that deer tied up in his goat shed. So just to make the point that it didn't just wander in there to hide, it's tied up.
Yeah.
So the devil has delivered, as this talking wolf later informs him. And
yeah, and picture this: this wolf hunt is, you know, noble folk on horses and dogs everywhere, and and there are wolves in the woods,
and the masters of the hunt, who are the servants, who are going around trying to track down the deer, and he is getting beaten up by people going by, like, you're not helping us, you got in the way, let's give him some lashes. So it's a real old-fashioned classic deer hunt, I guess. With the uncaring nobles. Although this noble actually isn't that uncaring when you read about him. He's actually a pretty nice guy.
Yeah, right.
But he's in the passion
of the hunt. Thibault is just having trouble keeping up with the people and all that stuff. I mean, as far as, you know, if there's social commentary, you know, he's in a place... And he's a little bit envious, at least, of these folks on the horses. And you know, they're magnificent up there, ordering people around. And, you know, and he's the opposite of that.
Yeah, he's definitely always envious of people. Oh, I wish that was me. If I had that money and that horse, I could do this thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And in fact, at one point, Dumas says something like, you know, so if we're not always exposed to the things that are above us, it might be better. And yeah, like, which these days is very anti-capitalist in America. But in a certain sense, now that I'm thinking about it, it's kind of like if all you do is spend your time looking at what other people have, isn't that kind of like social media where everybody's putting their best pictures of themselves?
That's so well put. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, social media is a complete lie in that you're often seeing just seconds of a person's life and your mind is filling in what the rest of their life is, you know? And, yeah, you're certainly looking at things all the time that, you wish you were.
Yep. Right. And it can make you have unrealistic expectations for your own life. It can make you bitter against people that you don't even know.
Extremely.
It can make you feel like what you do that's might not be perfectly good is justified because you didn't have an even shake. I mean, all kinds of things going on.
Very well put. Yeah, I didn't make that connection, but that's great. Love it.
No, just when we're talking. That's what brings it out, right?
Yeah.
Talking. So anyway, so that's his situation. And he, at the same time, meets a pure, beautiful young girl. Let's see, I wrote her name down. Agnolette.
Yeah.
I thought it meant little lamb. It doesn't seem to mean anything.
Hmm.
But she's perfectly pure and wonderful and sweet. And he thinks he's in love with her. And she's willing to believe in his love for her because she's perfectly pure and sweet. And what she really wants is somebody who will help her take care of her good old grandmother.
Hmm.
And she's willing to be in love or marry anybody who will help her do this, you know, in a very honorable way. She's good and pure. And so they get engaged. And then the very next day, he forgets all about it. So he goes on from there. And the one thing I guess I could say, shall I talk about the hair?
Yeah, because that was fascinating stuff. Yeah.
Wasn't it? So the devil says, you can have as many wishes as you want. But every time you make a wish, one of your hairs is going to turn bright red for the first wish. The second time, two hairs will. The third time, four will. So every time it doubles.
Yeah, I think he's actually, the way he puts it originally is that it will cost you one hair. There's no details, right? That's part of the devil's pact, you know, is convincing you that, hey, this is going to be all right, right? He says, this will cost you, it was something like one hair for the first wish, two for the second, three for the third.
Okay.
Something like that, yeah.
Okay.
And then it was part of the surprise of the book, how that fell that out, right? And he's...
Right.
Oh, and then his efforts to get rid of that hair was so good.
Yeah, so it's interesting, because then not only do you have a mark that you did this thing, but everyone else can see it.
Yeah, yeah, and it is irremovable.
Yes, he tried. He tried cutting it, using it.
Yeah, just the description of that, you know, when he was using some metal implement to try to cut the hair off as close to his scalp as he could, and it actually dented the metal instrument. He looked at it, and the width of one hair, there's a dent in this knife, but it seemed to be not quite a knife, but like something even more hardy. But he couldn't pull it out. Yeah.
Couldn't. And then he says, I can just hide it under my other hair. But the thing is, to me also, they said, the thing is this isn't red hair like carrot red hair or deep red hair like we expect. It is vividly bright blood red. And once I read about all the ways he was trying to get rid of it, I couldn't help it. I kept imagining like metallic red hair, you know, nice, so it would look even not really like hair.
Right.
Although they didn't say that, but it was just so obviously wrong.
Yeah. I was just picturing it as like wolf hair. Just knowing that, you know, the wolf is the one who set up this deal. I was thinking it was wolf hair. you know, red, but it was going to feel like horse hair or just really coarse.
Oh, coarse.
You know,
but it's long like his own hair.
Yeah. And it's, you know, his own hair is not like that. And this is just a complete obvious red shock of hair.
Yeah.
That would have been surprising to anyone who saw it. But,
it was.
Yeah. And that's how I felt. It was like, you know, to me, he was turning into a wolf. The more the more he went along and the more he wished, the more hair he grew, right?
Yeah. So what we then see is the series of events of him encountering people and things that he's interested in and that he wants. And so he's making these wishes and what happens to him.
Yeah.
And what happens to the people and how do the wishes turn out? That's, and it's called the wolf leader. Well, I guess we don't need to talk about that right now.
Let's move on into spoiler territory.
Anyway, so that's the deal. It's just, you know, it's him and this Faustian thing. And the thing I think is interesting is the author specifically mentions Faust. Well, let me find the page number here. 176.
I've got the Audible book,
Oh, okay.
So I can, Poor fool.
So,
if he had been a man of learning. Yeah, go right ahead if you have it.
Go ahead.
Okay. Poor fool, if he had been a man of learning, he would have known the legend of Dr. Faust. To what did the omnipotence conferred on him by Mephistopheles led Faust, the dreamer, the thinker, the eminent scholar, to the murder of Valentine, to Margaret's suicide, to the pursuit of Helen of Troy, the pursuit of an empty shadow? And moreover, how could Thibault think coherently at all of ways and means while jealousy was raging in his heart? I'll stop there, but yeah.
Well, that's it. And and so what I like is at that point, we're specifically reminded of the intelligence of the person who makes the deal with the devil in Faust. Now, I've never read Faust, but I thought, so this guy's not even aware of the story, but what hope does he have when Faust couldn't do it, right?
Right.
And so, and on the page right before that, it says he went over again all the old questions which had upset his mind from the beginning, which had brought despair upon so many before him and would bring despair to so many that came after. Why should some be born in bondage and others be born to power? Why should there be so much inequality with regard to a thing which takes place in exactly the same way in all classes, namely birth? By what means can this game of nature's, in which chance forever holds the cards against mankind, be made fairer? And is not the only way to accomplish this to do what the clever gamester does, get the devil to back him up? He had certainly thought so once. To cheat? He had tried that game himself. And what had he gained by it? Each time he'd held a good hand, each time he felt sure of the game, it was the devil who had won. What benefit had he reaped from this deadly power he had been given to him of working evil to others? None. And so what I'm going to point out is this is a little over halfway through the book. He's stopping and thinking about this and not making great conclusions.
Yep. That's right. That's right. Yeah, it's a really good book. So let's see. Dumas wrote this in 1857, just to make sure we know that. And The Three Musketeers was 1844, and The Count of Monte Cristo was, it says, 44 to 46. So this is, 12 years later.
And of course, he was writing so many books all the time.
Oh, was he? Yeah.
And I think, I could be wrong on this, he might have been one of those people who also had, you know, his gallery of people where here's the ideas, you start writing it and I'll go in and fix it later. Because he just had book after book after book. He was so popular.
Wow,
but he also went through so much money and so many women and all the things. So you got to have a lot of books coming out.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was a Frenchman, right? Lived
sure
in France.
Was.
Paris, France.
He's one of,
I don't even know
yeah,
Paris.
He's one of those they like to look at and go, these days, back then, I don't know if people paid that much attention, at least when I was young, you know, which isn't necessarily back then, but he was also part black. And the French didn't care that he was just moving in society. His great grandfather, or maybe grandfather, had been a general in Haiti. See, now here's where I'm getting into my very shady history. But
yeah,
he had been very celebrated, really wonderful. And then his father, also very celebrated and wonderful. And here comes Alexandre Dumas. And so nobody cared.
Mm-hmm.
He had mistresses of all sorts. He had, you know, various children. He moved in high society because he was kind of like Oscar Wilde, I think, in a way where people would ignore a lot of stuff just because he himself was so fun to be around.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, good for him. Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Anyway.
So, yeah, definitely off into spoiler territory for sure.
Okay.
If we aren't already.
we might be dabbling in it. No,
kind of dabbling, yeah. But, yeah. I mean, we call it a Faustian tale, and there are some elements that are going to be in common. Mm-hmm. I think everybody knows what that is, but.
Yes.
But, yeah, so I really, gosh, there's scenes in this book that I've just loved. Absolutely loved, you know, especially, you know, the first talk with the wolf,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's a black wolf and he does call it Satan. If not directly, it's in a chapter title.
Yeah.
You know, so we know as readers who he's dealing with and he does call him a devil. I just don't recall if he actually calls him Satan or not. But you know, there's always, you know, the devil showing up at a moment of deep distress and convincing you that this is the right thing to do. Boy, that's a story that we see over and over and over. And, mm-hmm. you know, here we have the form of the wolf, you know, so the black wolf shows up and he's talking to, you know, he comes into the shed. I picture it like a shed, it's a barn or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and running from the hunt. And yes. he's like, yeah, you know, we're going to save me. And, yeah, the deal he gives him, it just seems incredible, you know? So yeah, whatever you wish is going to come true, but it's going to cost you a hair. And you're like, mm-hmm. well, I'll take that. I'll take that deal. And of yeah. course, you know, he makes his first wish and it is that, these, I think it was two noblemen that were on the hunt. He wanted them either out of the way or I think he actually said something like, let an accident befall them. And instantaneously, yeah. right after he says it, over the hill comes the hunting group with these two, if not dead at the moment, they're hurt pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so he, and that keeps happening in the book too. And that was always strikingly neat. You know, he'd just say something and, it would happen just instantly.
Yes.
And, that was really cool how Dumas pulled that off.
Yeah. One really of the people effective. Had drowned his special enemy, I think.
Yeah.
Or was that a little later? Had drowned.
Mm-hmm.
And that I would kind of keep yeah. coming back to him through the book.
Right, right. But yeah, I mean, just how these effects were happening was really something. And then...
because they were always natural seeming.
Yeah, they always seemed natural.
It was
natural.
Never it lightning came like, out of the yeah. sky. It was
exactly
just like
right.
his horse fell down.
Oh, yeah. There was a couple times that there was a moment where he was pursuing a woman... romantically, right? Whatever romance is in this mm-hmm. guy's head. And he says he wants this person out of the way, but don't hurt him, right? I don't want to accidentally kill him. I just don't hurt him, you know? And instantaneously, these soldiers come over the hill and they're collecting him because he had enlisted and it was time to take him off to the army. And, you know, there were moments like that I was thinking, so was that going to happen anyway? You know, did that, it cost
That's
him a wish,
it.
You know, and is this just happening, you know, like it was supposed to happen? And,
That's what I was
he's
wondering.
Being caught up in there. Yeah. And all the time he's growing this hair, you know, every time it happens, it's multiplying and it's becoming more and more obvious to everybody. And it starts to be that when he's in people's presence, they're alarmed by his appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. He tries to hide it at first, but eventually it's so much. He kind of even forgets to look in the mirror eventually. But
yeah.
Well, and I really, truly love the whole sequence of him being interested in the miller's widow.
Hmm.
And who she loves his, I think it's his nephew.
Yeah.
And that's why he doesn't want him hurt. Who's been working at the mill. And the miller, it's, and the nephew is in love with her too. But she's showing it by treating him superciliously, ordering him around and everything. But she truly underneath loves him.
Yeah, yeah.
But what you see is that Thibault is so self-centered and oblivious, he doesn't really recognize this. And so when the young man is taken away by the soldiers, he then immediately goes, now's my big chance. She's like, oh no, my true love is gone. I mean, she's literally saying things like this.
Mm.
And he's like, now's my chance. So, honey, ha-cha, you know, and she's like, get out, get away from me.
Mm-hmm.
And so he plays it so wrong that the opportunity's there, but he doesn't know how to take advantage of it. And this, what happens is with every opportunity he gets, he's moving up the social strata.
Hmm.
So the next woman he's interested in is richer and married to a, you know, a different class guy.
Right.
And then the next one is really high class. Right. And so as he's going, you do start to see that a lot of these things look like coincidence. But eventually it gets to a point where it cannot be mistaken, such as when he winds up being in the body of the young man, the young, is he a count or a lord?
Yeah, he wanted to be him for a day, right?
Yeah, he wanted to be him for a day, and suddenly he's in his body, and the count's in Thibault's body.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this makes it, you can't doubt it anymore.
Right, right. Yeah,
so
very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and he messes it up every time.
He does. He messes it up every time horribly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, so he even so before that he goes to this house. He's interested in a woman, and he's going to this house where these lords live, right? And he ends up getting in a fist fight with this with the guy. That he's having dinner with, right? That was crazy. So, but he's ruining himself because he doesn't know how to act when he's there at all. So that is an interesting thing. You know, some of the stuff you were talking about at the very beginning about, you know, seeing this better life, quote unquote, wanting to be mm-hmm. part of it, but getting there and you don't belong there at all. And he doesn't know how to be there. And it's always exposed, you know?
Yeah, because now that I'm thinking about that, the only one he's perfectly comfortable with and gets along with well is Annulette.
Mm.
That's how you say it.
Yeah.
And so she is his class.
Right.
She's a peasant girl.
And yeah, of course, being married to her, that's the first one he goes after, right? And mm-hmm. and he's you know, that was another cool thing. So the devil gives him a ring. It's like, you have a gold ring, I have a silver one, let's swap. So now he's got a gold ring, and then he wants to give it to Annulette. And it won't go on her finger. That was really cool because it kept mm-hmm. changing size. So no matter what finger he tried to put it on, it wouldn't work. And, you know, but he was lying the whole time. He kept telling her, I bought this for you. And he did not. You know, he got it from the devil himself. And he was trying to put it on her finger. And, and then... So that was even right at the beginning of the hair. So he didn't, there was something in his countenance though that she saw that she was horrified by. And that was an interesting thing too.
Yeah.
She got to where I just, you know, I don't know. It wasn't even explained. He was wondering, what did she see in me? And, you know, as a reader, we're like, well, you know, you're in the wrong place, man. She can see through you. She can see what you're doing.
Right.
She can see that there's something there. And something diabolic, right? And somehow she was able to see
evil.
It. Yeah.
She could just see evil or evil intentions.
Mm-hmm.
Because by the end of the book, he's just saying, he's not even trying to pretend anymore. I just want this because I want this woman. He's just going, I just want to be evil.
Oh.
I hate everyone. I want to just, you know, rain chaos on the town around me and my pack of wolves.
Yeah.
And so this is the beginning of that, because when you don't try to control your passions, which I think isn't that the werewolf thing in the myths you were fairy tales you were talking about, is it's because you become an animal, so your passions are unreined.
Mm.
And I could be wrong, I guess.
No. I think that's what the story is all about.
Okay.
I mean, the typical werewolf story, right?
Yeah, and it often you're sexual giving, passion, giving
your,
right?
Yeah, exactly. You're giving yourself really over to your bodily passions, the beast, everything.
Exactly.
Right, and you're eliminating the spiritual and the intellectual completely.
Yeah, because he never tries to control his desires, ever. He just says, I have carte blanche, now I'll ask for this.
Hmm.
And the part I was reading earlier is when he's like partway into this and going, why is nothing ever working for me? What is going on with this?
Hmm.
And so he has his own moments of reflection and even self-realization, but he blames everyone else.
Hmm.
He blames the devil. He blames the other people. He never takes credit for himself or responsibility, shall I say, instead of credit, for what it is that he's wishing for and trying to do, which is always reprehensible. There's always already some romantic attachment going on that he's trying to break up. And even toward the end, where he's dealing with extremely high-class people who are very true to Dumas, if you've ever read The Three Musketeers, they're busy trading beds and having affairs and being amusing with each other and doing all their things they do. But this is seen as kind of normal behavior for the time.
Mm.
And he's injected into this when he enters the body of the young nobleman. And he can't do that either. And it would be accepted there.
Mm, right. Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I love the description too when, and I think I found it here. Yeah, now brought himself to believe. So when, after he goes through, so he starts with Annulette. And then he's going through these pursuits of these various other women, and it all falls apart every single time. And then he sees Annulette again. And he says, on seeing Annulette again, so fresh and pretty, so innocently happy, and worse still, seeing her at the moment when she was about to be married to another, Thibault, who had not given a thought to her for the last 3 months, Thibault, who had never had any intention of keeping the promise which he made her, Thibault now brought himself to believe that he had never ceased to love her. How he put that was just great. You know, it's like, this is now the new shiny thing that I am obsessed over, even though, you know, he never loved her. You know, he just never did. And now he's seeing her again, and he's now convincing himself, oh, this is the right thing all along. And it's just the way that he put that made me think all that. It's like, now brought himself to believe that he had never ceased to love her.
Yeah.
And now this is my new
object. He's always rewriting history.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's always making himself into a better person.
Mm.
And because then he gets mad that she's not stayed faithful to him. And he's mad at the young man that she's marrying.
Yeah.
Because how dare he? She's engaged.
Yeah. And he's convincing himself. Yeah. He's convincing himself that she is being adulterous, you know, when there was nothing agreed to or anything like that.
Because he talks to her later and she's like, I waited for you. I waited and waited. You were nowhere. I needed someone to take care of my grandmother.
Mm.
Yeah. And then he convinces himself that she can't possibly love this man. So once they're married, he wants her husband to be attacked by wolves. And this is when, isn't this when he starts the reign of terror where wolves, he's like, go ahead and eat what you want. Humans too. And they're like, ooh, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. By this time he's got a pack of wolves following him around. That first scene where he first started being surrounded by wolves and he was afraid and then he reaches out and pets one and, Dumas was so great in how he did that. Again, it's like stepping into this territory that you know is wrong, but then starting to get comfortable in that And then you move on to the next step. And then you get comfortable there. And then you move on to the next thing. And you get comfortable there. Next thing you know, you're way down that road.
Yeah.
And isn't that how things work?
Oh, it's just exactly. That's the thing where I just thought this just really shows when you just give in to all these impulses, it puts you in such a bad place and you can't win. You have to turn yourself over to God to try to get out of it.
Yeah.
And for Thibault, he's just going, nope, I'm going to go from bad to worse because that doesn't even cross his mind, really.
Yeah.
And yeah, the way that the wolves, the reason it's called the wolf leader is that when he's going back to his house, I guess it's after with the Miller's wife, and he's in the woods, and a couple of wolves come out, and he's freaking out, going, oh, no, they're going to kill me. And they just start following him like they were dogs. And then come a few more, and then a few more, and then a few more. And he's just like, holy crap, but they're just walking. Seems okay. And then don't they go running? They get to his house, and they go running off and bring him all this game out of the woods. Yeah,
that's right.
That they caught for him.
He even used him even later than that to collect game so he could deliver it to that rich person's house with that woman he was after.
Right.
So he brought a whole cart full of meat. And
because in between times, he would tell them to do that, and he would take the meat and sell it in town.
Yeah.
And so he was making a good living off of having them hunt for him.
Yeah.
And wow, they were delighted to do it.
Yeah, delighted. Oh, that's good.
They loved him.
They did.
Thought he was great. They'd wag at him like a dog. And, of course, in the book, it's pointed out that there are some creatures of the night that you never mess with because you just know they're associated with evil. And the wolves, of course, are the main one. And back then, you know, wolves were a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, up here, they're a problem, too. I'm in Utah.
Yeah.
They're not a problem. They're not a problem where I'm at. But remember, there was this big reintroduction of wolves into Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. And it's still an issue for surround Yellowstone.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. Man, they're good-looking dogs, though, aren't they? They're beautiful.
They're so
beautiful
handsome.
Creatures.
Yeah. Yes, they really are.
Yeah.
Unlike coyotes, you see them and you go, oh, they just look like mangy, scrawny dogs. But wolves look very noble.
Yeah, majestic.
If you're in the right mindset. If you're not in the mindset where the wolf comes up and takes your baby while your back is turned, you know.
Exactly. And that's just the nature of a wolf, right?
Yeah, right.
That's what they'll do. So,
and that's why they would hunt them. And that's, you know, because from our mindset, we look at it and go, oh, well, we think of the environment and the animals and their niche in the world. But back then, you were just trying to make it as a human being.
Right.
And they had to stay away from you and yours.
Well, and so, that is a really interesting thought to go down too, is just this idea of the nature of something. And you're not going to change the nature of something.
Yeah.
It is what it is, you know, and it doesn't matter how you feel about it. But yeah, you know, you get involved with the wolves and you're not in a good place. You know, and I'm speaking metaphorically, of course, but it's just this idea of you're playing with fire. I'm looking at a paragraph that was right before the one that I had just read, and it talks about jealousy. But it's like that, you know. There was a quote that I liked. I think it was by this guy named Hammarskjöld. He said, "You cannot play with the animal in you without becoming wholly animal. Play with falsehood without forfeiting your right to truth. Play with cruelty without losing your sensitivity of mind. He who wants to keep his garden tidy does not reserve a plot for weeds."
That's so good.
Isn't that nice?
It's funny, it makes me think of something I recently experienced in that, this is going to sound so silly, but Rose got this gaming computer. And so on the evenings when she's not here, I'm playing this game called Tyranny.
Hmm.
And it's an interesting game because you basically have to be evil. Everybody in it is evil. There's one army that's very methodical and organized, but they will not accept anybody in. They kill everybody they meet. There's another army that's just like crazy chaotic, but they will take anybody they meet who will convert to their way of thinking because that's how they grow. And this is all run by an overlord, and you are working for the overlord to take over this last part of this continent. So you have to make terrible decisions, right? And I'm like, oh, well, this and this, and that's fine, and that's fine, and that's fine. And then they got to this one part of the game where there are these kind of beast people, I think they're called. Mm-hmm. And they're just kind of like intelligent gorillas in a sense. But you have to wipe them all out. And I was like, oh, no, I just solved two problems for these people. And here's these little ones that have been playing for 2 years and growing so well. And I don't know if I can do this. Hmm. And it was horrible. I mean, this is just a game. But I was like, I don't think I can kill these creatures. And, of course, they're kind of playing on that. But you have to for this path of the game to go forward. And I was telling Rose, and Rose went, yeah, there's been some games where she's been on a path where she's like, I had to quit playing the game because it was asking me to do stuff I just couldn't face, even though it's just pixels on a screen.
Yeah.
And I just thought, this is the power of story, right? Mm. It makes us live it. And in fact, what I did was I was looking something up about, is there a way around this situation? And it was like, no, unless you take the rebel's path. And I was like, hold on, what? There are rebels against all these evil people? Sure enough, there are. And it's a little more interesting because you're trying to balance everybody and make them think you're still working for evil and you're not. Yeah. But I was like, but I don't have to kill these beast people. I'm going to start the game again and try that because I just couldn't face it. And it's that thing that you're saying about, you know, if you dabble in brutality, you become a little more brutal. And I realized it sounded bad, but it was making my stomach hurt, man. Mm,
yeah. I felt the same way in some games as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you play, some of these D&D type games. Mm-hmm. And you can be a character and you can decide, oh, I'm going to play as an evil person or something like that, or I'm going to play as a good person. And I feel the same way. I mean, I always try to be the good person simply because it bothers me. It bothers me to do it differently.
And what we're seeing in this book is the more Thibaut gives into that evil impulse, it starts off as small impulses, and he knows he shouldn't. When the one person dies in the river, it's the hunting person who he didn't get along with, and the Baron, who are both hurt.
Yeah.
And the Baron, they do some special medicine or a prayer, some kind of a magic thing that make him live, from somebody else. But this guy drowned. And he feels really bad. He's like, well, I didn't necessarily mean that to happen. But kind of underneath, he's kind of like, but I'm glad he's gone.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And then by the end of the book, he just doesn't care anymore because he's taken those first steps and it kind of has hardened him to everything else. And that's what happens in our own lives. We have to be careful because things that seem like they're not that big a deal easily slide into it. And I'm not saying you and I are sliding into it, but, you know, even just personal habits that you're trying to fight.
It is something.
Every time I give in for those things, it's harder to get back on the right path.
It is something to keep your eye on, though. I mean, and there's no doubt. You know, there are things that we can watch, movies we can watch, books we can read and everything that make us feel that a certain way of life is acceptable. You know, you can find, you know, you can justify almost anything. And, people have justified almost anything, let me say. And then, you know, taking that inside yourself without, you know, like removing your lenses or whatever and letting that just come inside, it can be harmful. And there's no doubt about that.
Well, think of the overwhelming addiction to pornography that's existing right now.
Yes. Yeah, very true.
And, you know, it starts off probably relatively innocently.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as that can. But even just say, give somebody the benefit of the doubt and go, they're just curious. Or they're so lonely or whatever it is. But it soon slides into worse and worse and worse because that what you started with isn't enough. And it's, it really makes you think about the importance of avoiding the occasion of sin. Try not to, you know yourself well enough that you go, this is a problem for me. I cannot either, play this part of this game or watch this thing or be in this situation. I think probably for people who struggle with alcoholism or things, that probably is important for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because this book is one slide into evil.
It is. It's just a slide. And he starts off at the beginning with, he's never had noble intention, but he was given this easy way. And he took it thinking, well, the consequences are not going to be that bad. And these Faustian stories go, the consequences are hellish. And it's destruction the whole time. He's just a source of destruction wherever he goes. And what's interesting in this book that is different from other Faustian tales that I've read is the very end. And we need to talk about that.
Yes, let's talk about that. So, because the thing that's interesting is he finally gets to the point where he only has one of his own hairs left.
Yeah.
He's at his last gasp. And the wolf has told him, I'm trying to remember the order these things happen in. So the wolf says, you can become immortal. Right? And you don't have to worry about anything if you just become a wolf. Mm. You can get inside the skin, essentially. Now, there's 24 hours during the year when you are vulnerable. But other than that, no one can get you, no matter what. And he goes, heck yeah. Of course, that happens to be during the 24 hours when he's vulnerable. I was like, oh, the devil never misses a trick, right? He's like, well, I don't want to be in here. I'll let you be in here instead. Mm.
Yeah.
And so he's being hunted, and during that time period is when he sees, it might be before that, when he sees the wolves who he told that could attack any human they wanted, they attack Agnellette.
Mm.
And so she's not doing great. She's basically dying after that. And have I got that order right?
Yeah.
And so
Yep. Seems right to me.
And that's the one thing that touches him. She's so pure and innocent, and he can recognize that. And even though he's been leading these wolves on attacking everybody, it never occurred to him that somebody he actually knew or cared about would be attacked, because he didn't think he cared about anybody.
Hmm.
But he can recognize the goodness that's deep in her.
Right. And she died as a direct result of his action, too.
Yeah.
Even though it was unintentional. It was an unintentional consequence of his action.
Yes.
Right.
And it says here, she's dying, and he sees them with the coffin that they're nailing up and burying. And he says, the hard stones, he thought, must be bruising Agnellette's tender flesh, so fresh and sweet but a few days ago, and only yesterday still throbbing with life. And he made a movement as if to rush out on the assailants and snatch away the body, which dead must surely belong to him, since living it had belonged to another. But the grief of the man overcame this instinct of the wild beast at bay. A shudder passed through the body, hidden beneath its wolf skin. Tears fell from the fierce blood-red eyes, and the unhappy man cried out, oh God, take my life. I give it gladly, if only by my death I may give back life to her whom I have killed. These words were followed by such an appalling howl that all who were in the cemetery fled, and the place was left utterly deserted. And so everybody runs away as fast as possible. Except the Baron, who's been hunting wolves, so they come right for it. And all they find is the skin of the wolf. No body in it, except for, and the wolf had one white hair, but it was entirely black. So that one white hair is obviously his.
Yeah.
And it said that what became of the body, no one ever knew. Only as from this time forth, Tybalt was never seen again. It was generally believed that the former Sabbat maker and no other was the werewolf. And then people said, well, here's what he said. And so the priest said that he, Tybalt, by reason of his sacrifice and repentance, had been saved. And what added to the consistency of this belief in the tradition, the belief in this tradition, was that every year on the anniversary of Amulet's death, I cannot read, up to the time when the monasteries were all abolished at the revolution, a monk from the abbey, oh good heavens, of the Premonstratensians, let's say that, at Bergfontein, which stands half a league from Preciamont, was seen to come and pray beside her grave. And so the implication is that he's been snatched by God and given his life in service to God as a monk.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the words were followed by such an appalling howl that all who were in the cemetery fled. I think that that was the devil.
Oh, yes.
Lamenting what he just lost.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that. And the place was left utterly deserted. Yeah. And then at the same moment, the hounds, having recovered the scent, came leaping in over the wall. That's just great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and yeah, and so what you have there is, and this is what makes the book different and worthwhile to me, despite, you know, the fact it's Dumas, so it's very entertaining the whole way through.
Yeah, it was great. It was good.
Yeah, yep. It's just a lot of fun, especially if during most of his quest, you're willing to just go, oh my gosh, what idiots, you know, and laugh with them. But it's this idea that his pure love and his complete sacrifice of himself, his willing sacrifice for no gain to try to get her life again, is a Christ-like sacrifice.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's what saves him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. Yeah, at first I was... As I was working this out, you know, it's like, how do I feel about this? You know, I think I threw you a question. I said, well, you say, no, if, you know, if only by my death I may give back life to her whom I have killed, right? And I was thinking, okay, as I was reading, I was thinking, oh, is she going to come back? And she didn't come back. She wasn't restored. But she lives on, right? She lives on in heaven. And, but it was the sentiment, it was his sentiment that I would give my life for her to come back, you know? So again, it was this repentance of what he had done, a true repentance.
Yeah. It's pure intention.
Yeah. And then, you know, as I thought about it too, it would have been silly if she had come back. That would have been, that'd have been silly. Not that this book wasn't silly in places, but that actually would have removed the power of what happened right here.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it was great.
Because as a monk, he understands, because he comes every year, I guess if we're thinking about it, even though that's not in the book, he understands that that's what was done.
Mm.
I mean, he understands this is his service to God.
Yeah.
He's giving up his life for God.
Right.
And so that's okay. He's not trying to get out of it. He's consistently doing it.
Mm.
He has been redeemed because he is truly repentant.
Right. Which is what we believe, right?
Yes.
That's why the Catholic Church doesn't say, give you a list of people who are in hell. Oh, yeah. We give you a list of who we think's in heaven. I mean, we have saints. But we don't have the opposite, where we say, hey, here's a list of people we know are down there.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know who's down there.
No. Well, and also, it's this idea of just because we ask God for something, even though our intention is pure, and it might be very good for us to feel this way and reflect on it and want this to happen, it doesn't mean that prayer is going to have an answer or there's no proof that anything mattered or worked, so to speak.
Right.
Because God uses all kinds of things that don't matter to anybody else to make a difference in our lives and get our attention and draw us closer to him.
Hmm.
So this is the, and she would have died even happier knowing that she had saved him.
Yeah.
I mean, if she knew, and I guess she was dead by then, so, and presumably saved because she was so good and pure, she would be longing for him to make that prayer.
Right. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific ending. Yeah.
Yeah. I got to the ending. I was like, oh, yeah. Just going downhill. Then I went, oh, my gosh, this is perfect.
Well done. Yeah. Well done, Dumas. So, yeah, this is it's reading this made me interested in his other ones. And I don't recall reading even The Count of Monte Cristo, but I have seen probably two movies of The Count of Monte Cristo. Mm-hmm. And multiple Three Musketeer takes.
Yes.
So,
well,
yeah.
Yeah, and The Count of Monte Cristo is so long. It's very good. Like probably most people, my favorite is the first, fourth, or third, which is the part that usually gets put into the movies. You know, he's betrayed, he's in prison, he finds the old abbe who teaches him all the things. And the one I like, I don't know if I've seen any other Count of Monte Cristo movies, but the one with Jim Caviezel is really good in terms of it captures the whole real essence of the thing. It doesn't include all the details because, my goodness, you'd really need a miniseries to do that. The middle of the book, the Count is setting up his revenge. And the last part of the book, he's taking his revenge. And we're seeing the effect it has on him as well as the effect it has on the people he's achieving vengeance against. Mm. So it's really, really good. It's a big project. Just have to kind of say, this is my book of the year or something or whatever.
Okay.
But it's very good.
Very good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it. And The Three Musketeers is just a fun romp.
It's just fun.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yep.
Which is great.
Yep. So many sexy things happening in that book.
I love it. That's funny. Yep. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, good. Yep. Well, thanks for bringing this book to me. It was funny how, after I'd read it, I was poking around a little bit to see some commentary on it and things, and there just isn't very much. It just doesn't seem to be a book that's out there and around.
I know, but I think the translation is fairly recent for us. I mean, he wrote so many things. There are probably plenty of them that we don't have a lot of translations for.
Hmm.
So, and I think it just got discovered, even if it was translated a while back, I think it got rediscovered, 5-10 years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
So I was surprised by it. Yeah, it was during COVID. We were walking around the library because they would let you take books off the shelves. They just wouldn't send them around from different branches or anything. And Rose came across that, and she's always loved Dumas. She's read a whole bunch of his stuff, The Black Tulip.
Hmm.
And actually, there's another one that I really like, and it might just be called George, about half-black hero on an island that's kind of like a Haiti sort of a thing, but not. Anyway, and so I've read that one too, and it's quite good. And kind of been embraced by once the Black Lives Matter thing happened, you started seeing it get mentioned more and more. But she's read a whole bunch of his stuff, and she'd never heard of this. So she picked it up and really recommended it to me when she'd read it. And I was reading it just going, fun, okay. And then the ending just knocked me off my feet. It made the whole book so powerful.
Yeah, it sure does. It is stunning. You know, looking back on all the events through that lens is really great.
Right. So I'm glad you liked it, too.
Yeah, because he seemed very unredeemable.
he's not likable.
And that is just a reminder. I mean, that's doctrine, too. I mean, we believe that happens. So,
yeah. We don't have to like the person, but we do have to care about their soul.
Yeah, right.
Their soul matters, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading something in this book of Catherine of Siena that I'm reading by Sigrid Undset, and she was describing one of Catherine's visions that Christ gave her, which was somebody who died, who was just told the most horrible lies about Catherine. She was sorry right before she died and everything, but Catherine had to put up with all these rumors going around town of, well, you know what she does with her spare time in her bedroom. But Christ let her, she was praying so hard for this woman, and Christ said, let me show you to her to you. She was in purgatory, but she said the beauty of her soul there was more than anything Catherine had ever seen.
Hmm.
And she said, and this is somebody who was still not purified all the way and everything. And she just said, it made me realize how important we all are. And I was really just struck by that whole thing. Hmm. And then you think of, how unlikable Thibault is, but he's just is beautiful, because what God, what Jesus told her was, because I created this beauty myself, I put it into this person, because everything I create is beautiful, and this is who I see when I see this person.
That's awesome.
And he just, I know.
Yeah.
It was really amazing.
Mm, that's great.
Yeah.
Wow. So. Yeah. Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
All in a werewolf story.
Or close enough.
Close enough, yeah.
We can find the tangential connections, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, okay. So what is coming up now? So we're into November, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
This year is moving.
I know.
So yeah, what's next is Green Book.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, that was sold as a racism story, I think.
Uh-huh.
Because of the Green Book situation. Mm-hmm. But really what it is an amazing buddy movie.
Oh, cool.
Buddy road movie kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Becoming buddies road movie. Excellent. It's really, I really liked it so much better than I thought I would when I heard of it.
Yeah. I am looking forward to that.
Okay, good.
So very good. All right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again for this book. Happy Halloween, everybody, if you're listening to this around Halloween.
I guess so. It is. Happy Halloween.
All Saints and All Souls.
Yeah. Yes.
Coming up. Yep. That's great.
Also, I want to say All Saints is on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy your feasting on Friday.
Excellent. That's great.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good.
In the spirit of the werewolf, have some meat.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, all.
Yeah. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.